Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Insider, brought to you, just for a change, by Vanishing Ink. Now, first off, some good news. Everybody has had kind of a pretty rubbish 18 months, haven't they, really? So Andy and Josh thought it would be nice to be nice, so they've decided to extend our summer sale until Friday. That means you can still get 25% off almost every Vanishing Ink product. Books, downloads, tricks, the whole kit and caboodle. So whilst you're listening to the second half of this interview with Derek Hughes, run along to vanishinginkmagic.com/sale and see what you're going to put in your basket. All right, let's get on with the show. We pick up where we were talking about AGT. I'm interested in the material selection for it, particularly the why you chose to do a trick that was published in 1947, Francis Carlyle's homing card. Now, I'm not being dismissive of the trick. I love it. But why did you pick this ancient yet brilliant trick to do on card trick to do on TV?
So here's that comes from them insisting that I kind of open with my closer.
Right.
Right? So I made a conscious choice to work then sort of backwards through my show. So in the final rounds, I did my opener, which is a rope routine. Uh-huh. And that was my final. You know, I just sort of decided I'm going to work backwards then. And the Carlyle routine is, I also knew that I'm going center stage, you know, Radio City Music Hall, live television. I want to do something that I know so well that I'm bulletproof.
Right.
So I didn't, for that particular show, I didn't go off the charts with creating brand new material just for America's Got Talent. Not that season. I did material that I knew backwards and forwards, so I could truly be present with the cameras and the audiences.
It makes sense. There's going to be people listening to this that want to know how you take something and make it funny. So can you talk a bit about, let's say, the homing card? How do you take that and, air quotes, make it funny? What's the process?
Well, you know, that routine, the humor derives predominantly from being present with the other person.
Right.
Okay. And I think a lot of my humor comes from, it's relationship based, you know, and it is, so it has come from years of performing a routine, and sometimes something really funny happens, and then I'm able to, using the actor's technique and scripting, fold that in and set the path up for it to happen again and again and again. A prime example is, you know, Matt King having an audience member accidentally sign the opposite side, the wrong side of a card. That happened once in a live show, crushed, and then he found a brilliant way to make that happen again and again and again that tells that same story, you know, to the audience. So great. So, man, that is a really, really hard question. How do you make something funny? I do feel like I'm blessed to be to have an inherent sense of humor, you know.
Sure.
When I was 10, recovering from open heart surgery in the hospital, my mother brought me a small G.I. Joe figure. And I was, you know, had this gore of surgery on my chest, and I could see my mother was very concerned and brave and afraid. And I took the guy and I ran him, and I'm like, hey, look, it's a battlefield, you know, and to get her to laugh, you know. And so that's, you know, like, I inherently want to diffuse tension, create humor, and so I'm not fully conscious about how I find humor, but I am alert to where humor might exist in a moment.
Right, right.
And often, it is really not. It comes from not comedy with a capital C. It's through tension and release.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. in magic, people are nervous about being on stage. So to be present with them, sense their tension, and then find places where you can relieve it without totally embarrassing them. You know, an example in my homing card routine, I have a person on stage, and this is so lowbrow, but I'm like, you know, it happens when I riffle the cards. When I riffle, that's a distraction. Can you hear that in the back? And I go, oh. And then I fan the cards and I wave. I'm like, someone enjoyed the buffet. So I've made a fart joke at their expense, you know, mm-hmm. in this moment of tension. And it's sort of an off the cuff. And the actor's technique to, as if I heard it, right? And the more subtly I play it, the better the joke, the more humorous it is. Really, if you can find those moments of comedy and then play them, see how subtle you can play it, almost like you're hiding it from the audience. See how low you can go and still get the laugh. And that's probably where a good place for it to live. Because as soon as it's like, whoa, you know, now it's, oh, it's a bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're more likely to get embarrassed as well, I guess. If you minimize that thing that you were talking about, then it's not so much poking fun at their flatulence.
Yeah. And I'll say to, no, I lost it.
Like so many people, you have made the pivot to be doing virtual shows during the crazy space that the world's been in the last sort of 18 months. How long did it take you to realize when the pandemic started that was where you needed to go?
Well, you know, I was not happy about it at all. The idea of performing in this space, it's so harrowing, you know, because you are alone in a room. I gotta say, man, after a year of doing virtual shows, I have recently seen on Netflix Bo Burnham's special Inside. I've watched it 3 times. That's all I'm gonna say. What a master. And that's how you do something alone in a room. It's really great. And captures all the emotion of how sad it all is. But exciting too, because, you know, at first I was very bummed. I did it pretty quick. I'd say I got rolling. I wasn't a first adapter. You know, I think the first adapters were people I saw saying, Tuesday on Facebook Live, I'm doing my show. And I saw a lot of that happening, you know, people immediately offering what they do in a virtual platform with Patreon or some sort of payment method and kind of almost like passing the hat. And what I did not want to do is take my live show, and which has a pretty decent price tag, and offer it, you know, in Facebook.
Yeah.
That was not interesting to me at all. And I didn't think that my live show would translate to Facebook. Because I saw a lot of people just doing what they do on stage, mm-hmm. but, you know, doing it in a room, you know, and trying to make that work with varying degrees of success. I knew it needed to be material that was specifically curated for this frame, mm-hmm. and so like many things I've done in the past, you know, I've done some theater runs where I'll think of the title of a show, and I'll print the postcards and book the venue, and I'll send the promo, and then I'll start working on that show. This is a good catalyst for creative yep. effort. So my amazing mentor and corporate friend, Bill Herz, was constantly reaching out to me saying, where's your promo? Get me a virtual promo. Get me a promo about your virtual show. I was like, ugh. I just was so resistant to that because I didn't want to set up a Zoom and hit record and then edit that into with a voiceover and say, here's my Zoom show and here's footage of me doing my Zoom show. It just seemed abysmal. And then, so I was kind of waiting for an idea on how to frame the experience. And then I got the idea. And once I had the idea, great. I was able to then put it together and shoot it. I think I sent a teaser link to this promo. It might be available on some Vanishing Ink email. But the idea was, I'm in a room and saying, hey, Derek Hughes here. And then I'm being interrupted by a voiceover, which I also recorded myself, but it's Derek Hughes has performed on MTV, VH1, you know, kind of all my accolades. And they're like, okay, what I'm trying to say is, what I'm going to do is we're going to get together and, in wherever you are, whether it's Doha Qatar, Radio City Music Hall, Manila, you know, like, okay, yes, I have been to all those places, but when I go there, we have fun. And wherever you are, on your toilet, you know, in your space. Okay. And I lose it. I get annoyed with this interruption. So the promo itself is a bit, right? Mm-hmm. Not just an ask, but it actually is sort of a piece of entertainment in and of itself. And then at the very end, boop, this was the whole idea, is boop, it cuts to my son at a microphone we've dubbed my voice. He's like, now can I have that cookie? You know, so there's a gag, right? So I did that. I made a promo, and then I had to make a show. And right. And then, but that was, I'd say, early summer.
Okay.
So it took me probably 4 months to get on board and actually start putting together some ideas that I felt were worthy of inviting an audience to go on a journey with me through their device.
Yeah, yeah. We get quite a lot of questions about the tech side of virtual shows here, and I understand you've got quite the setup. Can you tell us a bit about what you've learned in terms of production?
Yeah, I cheat.
Brilliant.
A little bit. I do, honestly. You know, I'm really blown away. I saw the show last week, our friend in San Francisco, and you know, he was talking about how he does everything. And he has multiple cameras and he's moving from room to room and there's sound and visual effects and he uses OBS software and, you know, and I'm like, wow. And I did have this thought where he was like, he's a much younger man than I. So take this with a grain of salt. When he said, I do everything, I was like, that's stupid. You know, like, you know, my thought is like, why? You know, like, but I think he's, I think it is an achievement and I think he's proud of that and he should, and I think he's grateful that he was able to find a way to do that. So he's proud of that. And what an achievement to be able to do that all on your own. I have hired a behind the scenes producer.
Right.
Who I run a handful of video clips during the course of my show. Mm-hmm. I do Toggle. I bring people on stage to be on screen with me. My preferred platform is called StreamYard, which is a really mm-hmm. sort of television studio type platform where, you know, the screens can be arranged in a different arrangement for interaction. And in StreamYard, you have full control over everybody's mute and sound, so, you know, someone coughing doesn't take center stage mid-show. And I have done many shows in other platforms. There's clients who are like, no, we're married to Zoom or we're married to, you know, Google Meet, and that's it, hard line. And that's fine. And we work around that. But I do have a behind the scenes guy that I do pay a pretty good percentage of my take. So I'm not thinking about that when I'm thinking about being here. Sure. And do I think about, geez, I could use the extra dough. You know, maybe I should figure out how to do that on my own, because so many people do it. And I think the audiences are very forgiving of someone like you're looking away. You're hosting this, but you also have a screen where you told mm-hmm. me you're checking questions and don't feel you're being rude. And I totally, we're becoming so accepting of this.
Yeah.
You know, looking for a button and doing a thing, and we're cool with it. So does it fully distract from the show? I don't know. I mean, every moment counts. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have someone helping me behind the scenes with what's happening here, and in my space, I've a lot of trial and error. It started, you know, it used to be this too. It used to be sort of a shelfie. I had a bookshelf behind me, and it was the first bunch of shows was on a plane. And then there was a trick I wanted to do that required a full body thing. So I turned the whole show, and here's sort of a sample of the corner. Derek Delgadio and Vanessa, we talked a lot about space, and they sort of helped me curate this, you know, magic posters with a curtain, because I have the wood paneling, and you know, and then finding a way to light that. Right now the lighting's not great, because you can see there's a where is it? There's like a reflection of a light there, mm-hmm. a reflection of a light there. This isn't the setup for the show.
Sure.
The setup for the show is up here.
Right.
So that's lighting a camera with a teleprompter and a second camera shooting down at, that's a table with a close-up mat on it that has a camera pointing down on it. So I do using this Black Magic switcher here, and I have a monitor, mm-hmm. And I also have an audio ape plugged in, so Matt doesn't run, you know, my tech guy doesn't run my music cues. He's doing visuals with like the audience and the video clips, and then I'm doing my own sound cues for music.
Like an animal.
yes, who would do that? I do stoop so low. You know, and it's fine. Let me just roll back to that. Because I think here's something I've discovered. As a younger artist, I did do it all myself. And that feels good, because as magicians, as we emerge into magic, it's one of the only arts where you're the writer, the producer, the director, the sound guy, the mm-hmm. light designer, the set designer, the PR guy, the graphic designer, the video editor. I mean, like, we really, for the most part, often do it all. And working on Carbonaro Effect and becoming a part of a team and discovering the power of delegation and collaboration and trust,
right,
that we can create things so much bigger. You know, the thing, I'm shifting from the discussion just for a moment, because that idea of, you know, what we can do as a team is really unbelievable. And part of working with Carbonaro on his show, I got a little depressed, and because it's like the little old lady who lifts a car off a kid. You know, you hear the story of the 80-year-old, you know, who lifts a car off a kid to save the kid. And everyone's amazed. It's a miracle. Superhuman strength. Unbelievable. And she gets sad. And everyone's like, why are you sad? You saved a life. And she's like, yes, but I can't help but dwell on all the things that I thought I couldn't do. And now I'm 80. Okay. So what we did in Carbonaro Effect is we lifted cars off babies, man. I mean, we're like, what if we tried this? There was an earlier incarnation of Derek mind that would say, not possible, but it is. Like, everything we wanted to do, we kind of found a way to pull it off.
Right.
either by pivoting the angle or changing the perspective, or, you know, just by putting it out there. I had I had the same experience early on working on an MTV show called Room 401. David Menken was a writer on it with me, and one of the ideas, Ashton Kutcher was the executive producer, and he wanted, at the time there was viral footage of a guy on a aircraft carrier getting sucked through a jet engine. And like, okay, it's sort of this grainy night vision video, and it like was real footage, and it was viral at the time. And he's like, can we do that? And we were like, yeah, we could try. And, you know, we all these ideas, and we would call airports and, you know, get pricing. And it was possible, but it was just too pie in the co- it was just too expensive. It was not in right. the budget. And then I kid you not, our location designer finds at Burbank Airport a gutted airplane for a company that does custom interiors for private jets.
Okay.
Okay? And this airplane has dummy engines. And suddenly, we're able to do this incredible thing. I mean, so again, you know, a team is very powerful, and we shouldn't limit our imagination to what we think is possible. I mean, come on, we're magicians.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. You ready for the segue? Talking of virtual shows, Derek, you'll be doing our virtual event Showtime in July. Good, eh? What can people expect from your show?
Not as good as a live show.
No, man, you're meant to be selling it.
That is selling it, because my live show is unbelievable.
Touché.
Listen, what you will see, and I'm speaking predominantly towards the magicians, is you'll see one of your brother magicians' efforts in full swing. What I aim to present to the Vanishing Ink audience is the show that I have offered to many satisfied clients over this bizarre window of time in our history. And I'm very grateful for the show that I'm going to present. You know, I'm grateful for the ideas that came that sort of poke fun at this world. And I'm grateful for some of the effects that cropped up and became a reality that work in this very weird space. I think there's some really strong stuff. I think you might see something that looks familiar used in a unique, adapted way. And yeah, you again, it's, we might do this question again.
We can do it again. I like it. But if you want to go again, we can go again.
No, I mean, really, that's it. Honestly, it's you're going to see one man's effort to make people smile and create wonder through ones and zeros.
I dig it.
Yeah.
We're not only out of time, we're over time. So I'm glad you're hard out. Vanished, but we always end the show with four quick fire questions. Are you ready? For audio listeners, Derek is limbering up.
Okay.
Favorite pizza topping?
It is a cheese pizza with sausage, pepperoni, broccoli, and garlic.
Broccoli's a curveball. I dig it though.
Makes it healthy.
Movie. Yeah, of course. It's yin and yang, man. It balances it
justifies the whole pie.
Favorite movie.
Can I say In and of Itself?
You can say In and of Itself.
That is one of my very favorite movies. And on the theatrical tip, you know, the first thing that popped in my mind was being John Malkovich. So.
Favorite person or people who make music?
You know, I'm going to say that there's a group of people that formed a band when they were kids called Nickel Creek. It was a bluegrass band. And the members are Sarah Watkins, Christile. Sean Watkins, and Chris Thiele. Yeah. And I want to say it's that group of people. And they're currently working on a new album together.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And they are, I learned a lot about what it means to be an artist, and I was very inspired. I had the wonderful opportunity to tour with them many times as their opening act. And I would see these people do their music all the time. I mean, all the time, not just on stage, but in the bus, in the green room beforehand, on stage, in the green room after, at the hotel. I mean, they just were immersed in what they do, and that's how they live. And I was inspired. I was like, I can be more like that. I could be more immersed, you know, in what I'm endeavoring to present to the world. So the members of Nickel Creek, not necessarily Nickel Creek. I love Nickel Creek, but it's really it's Sarah, Sean, and Chris are three of my favorite people that make music. Without a doubt.
Love me some Chris. Love his solo. Love his stuff with Brad. Love the Bark stuff. Love the Punch Brothers. Love him. So, yeah, we're not only both 50 this year, we both love Chris. So that's beautiful. Final question. Are you ready? Who would you rather fight, one massive Andy Gladwin or 100 tiny Joshua Jays?
Listen, Andy, don't take this the wrong way, man. But Josh, you know, Josh, when he was a camper at Magic Camp and I was a counselor, he wasn't very intimidating. But the kid's done some curls, you know? And I know that's not from Zero Shuffling. Those biceps, he's got to put some effort in. So I'm going to go, I think Andy and I are a more even match.
Fair enough. Derek Hughes, I look forward to the start of July to seeing your Showtime show, and I thank you for giving me so much of your time this morning. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Pleasure was mine, 100%. Thank you.